Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground.
Good morning, and welcome to the Garden Goddess Show on WDRT Radio, 91.9 FM for Roqua, Wisconsin. This is Donna Smith, here for the next half hour to talk gardening with you. In today's show, I'll be talking a lot about plants and the spring tasks that you are or will be undertaking very soon in your garden. We have had some crazy weather here in Vernon County over the past few weeks, including snow, rain, hail, warm temps, and still a few cold nights. It's turning out to be a fairly wet spring so far. And depending on the timing, you may or may not have had an opportunity to get some of your more timely garden tasks done. So let's jump right into today's show with a couple of questions from the garden cart. If you have a question about something going on in your garden or want some help or advice, you can email me. If you're curious about a garden-related topic that you'd like me to cover in a future show, let me know that too. Send an email with questions or suggestions to gardening@wdrt.org, and I'll respond on a future show. Our first question comes from my friend Paul. Paul sent a picture of an Annabelle hydrangea, which is Hydrangea arborescens Annabelle, and it's in his mom Sandy's yard. It's just beginning to grow. This particular hydrangea is more like an herbaceous perennial in our colder climate. It dies all the way back to the ground, so you can prune it back during your fall cleanup or leave until early spring and then cut it back to the ground. Sometimes if you leave it standing, it will sprout from near the base of the plant as well. Sandy's plant is located adjacent to the air conditioning unit behind their house. It gets cut back to the ground in the fall. Once it's grown in spring and early summer, and with its heavy blooms, it overtakes that AC unit. They'd like to know how best to prune or move the plant. From the picture that was sent to me, I can see that the plant has spread quite a bit, and new growth is quite close to the AC unit. Paul, I think that you can take a sharp spade and remove part of the plant that's too close to the AC unit. If you don't remove enough, just cut back any additional stems to the ground during the growing season, and then do any digging that you want on that in the fall to keep the plant in check later on. Sandy also wanted to know if putting some bricks around the AC unit would help to keep the plant from growing too close. It will spread again, but I think if you're able to dig out sections that creep too close to the air conditioner, then bricks are probably not critical. They will act as a visual reminder, however, of where the plant needs to stop before it becomes a problem again. The next question came from a listener who wants to know if they can save and plant any of the bulbs that they got around Easter time. That's a great question. Many of us bought or received Easter lilies or pots of forced daffodils and tulips this spring. Yes, you can save these bulbs and plant them in your garden. Daffodils are one of the best to replant. It may take a season or two to get another flower. The bulbs will likely only send up foliage and no bloom the first year in the ground. The leaves produce food needed for the bulb to flower again next year. I like to wait until all danger of frost is gone and then plant the forced bulbs into the ground. Remove the spent flower stalk and keep the plant inside in a sunny location. You can fertilize with a half-strength fertilizer and let the foliage on the plant naturally turn yellow and then dry out, being careful not to overwater them. Once the foliage dies back, plant the bulbs outdoors. Put these bulbs among your other garden bulbs or in perennial beds for that early spring show in the future. In the Patio Talk segment today, I want to share some great garden plants with you. I asked a friend if he could pick three new plants for his garden this year, what would he choose? He responded rather quickly, which told me he had already been thinking about this. First up is a witch hazel called Arnold Promise, the scientific name being Hamamelis X Intermedia, and the cultivar name is Arnold Promise. A cultivar is a cultivated variety of a plant that's typically chosen for specific characteristics or a desirable trait. This plant was raised and introduced by the Arnold Arboretum of Harvard University in Boston, Massachusetts. The original cross was identified back in 1945. It's a cross between two different witch hazels, Hamamelis japonica and Hamamelis malus, with an intermediate size characteristic. The original plant was said to be 20 feet high and wide. Arnold Promise has clear yellow flowers with a reddish calyx cup to the flower that are about an inch long. The flowers are fragrant, and this particular witch hazel blooms in February to early March. It's considered a large shrub and would be a very early blooming plant in the garden when nothing else is blooming in your landscape. The bloom time for this plant is quite unique, and the fragrant flowers are also a desirable trait. Incorporating fragrant flowers and foliage should be part of any garden design. These attributes can enhance a garden's beauty as much as flower and fall leaf color. Several other fragrant garden plants that you might consider including would be fragrant magnolias, Korean spice, Birkwood or Judd viburnums, hardy abelia, peonies, and herbs such as lavender, lemon verbena, and rosemary. The next plant deserving of a place in the garden is American smoke tree, Cotinus abovatus. It's a large upright shrub or small round-headed tree up to 20 to 30 feet high. The bluish to dark green leaves turn magnificent shades of yellow, orange, red, and reddish purple in the fall. The fall color is both intense and consistent from year to year. The bark is a beautiful gray to gray-brown, with the mature trunks becoming scaly, reminiscent of the scales of a fish. The pink smoke-like blooms give this tree its name. The panicles of flowers are 6 to 10 inches long and 4 to 6 inches wide and look very wispy. The smoke tree is well adapted to our limestone soils and is hardy to zone 4. A cultivar called North Star is hardy to zone 3, and one called Red Leaf has a especially good fall color. Give this plant a look for the next garden addition. It has always been one of my favorite plants and worth considering. Next up is a hosta called humpback whale. Humpback whale is a giant among the hosta cultivars, reaching 3 feet high and 7 feet wide at maturity. It's a mound of blue heart-shaped leaves. The plant has thick, leathery, corrugated leaves that are a powdery bluish silver in color and shift to a more greenish color in the summer. The leaves have a distinct hump in the middle, causing the tips to point downward, giving the hosta its name, humpback whale. In midsummer, it sends up scapes with white bell-shaped flowers that are attractive to hummingbirds. The 48-inch tall flower stalks add additional interest to this massive plant. It's definitely one that fits into the category of a focal point plant in any garden bed. This particular hosta was hybridized by legendary New England grower Mildred Seaver. It was sought after in particular for its gigantic dome of heart-shaped leaves. A few other hosta introduced by Seaver include Spilt Milk, Queen of the Seas, and one called Komodo Dragon. Most hosta prefer shade and damp growing conditions, but there are some that tolerate a bit of sun. This makes it fairly easy to find a spot for humpback whale in your garden. It will take some sun as long as the soil remains moist. Pair this or just about any other hosta with spring bulbs, such as daffodils or with native woodland perennials like Virginia bluebells, Mertensia virginica. Bluebells are an ephemeral. They emerge early in spring, blooming in April and May, then die back to the ground by early to midsummer. When paired with hosta or other perennials with large leaves, the new growth covers the dying foliage of the bluebells so it's not as conspicuous as it fades away. I mentioned that the humpback whale hosta is one that can take some sun. There are a number of great hostas suitable for a sunny location. You would want to put these hosta in a spot with soil that is consistently moist rather than soil that will quickly dry out, and not in standing water. A few recommendations are August Moon, Blue Umbrella, Fragrant Bouquet, Francie, Guacamole, Royal Standard, and some instubstance. We have some great hosta growers around Wisconsin that you might want to check out. Uniquely Hostas in Elroy, Land of the Giants Hosta Farm in Milton, Hollywood Bob's Hosta Farm in southeast Wisconsin, Hillsboro Hosta and Greenhouse in Hillsboro, Hosta Stop Gardens in Portage County, and Helfen Garden Center in Chippewa Falls. I have not been to many of these locations. I have been to Uniquely Hostas, but rest assured, I will be putting them on my next road trip itinerary. One additional plant that I would like to talk about today is hydrangeas. They've become a very popular landscape plant over the years. With the introduction of so many cultivars of this plant, it's no wonder that we see them everywhere. They fit well into just about any landscape with the numerous forms available. You can use them as a hedge or a border plant, as a foundation or specimen plant, and even in a container. There are over 50 species of hydrangea grown around the world. In North America, we grow 7 types of hydrangea. This includes the panicle, oak leaf, mountain, big leaf, smooth, climbing, and cascade. Panicle hydrangeas are probably one of the most popular. They get their name from the tall, showy, cone-shaped flowers. Hydrangea paniculata, cultivar grandiflora, is the cultivar that started it all. Limelight, Limelight Prime, Bobo, Firelight, and Little Lime Punch are just a few of the newer cultivars available in panicle hydrangeas. These plants are great choices for your landscape. They're hardy up to zone 3. You can find a range of plant sizes to fit in any garden, and there's a range of flower colors from white to pink to red. Prune these in early spring as the plants will bloom on the new growth produced as the plant grows. The panicle hydrangea is one of the more sun-tolerant hydrangeas as well. Many hydrangeas prefer more shade. And I want to mention 2 other species of hydrangea, starting with the hydrangea arborescens, the smooth hydrangea. Many will know the name Annabelle hydrangea when describing the smooth hydrangeas. Annabelle was first available in the 1960s and was named for the Bells of Anna, Illinois, who first discovered this plant in the wild. The plant is considered native to the eastern U.S. It's desired for its large, dense, round flower heads. They make great cut flowers and dried flowers as well. The plant likes full to part sun and has a more rounded, upright habit. Choose cultivars such as those in the Invincible series with a variety of sizes and flower colors, or Incredible for the strength of the stems to keep a more upright form when in bloom. The original Annabelle can be quite floppy, so ones with stronger stems are desired. The last hydrangea that I want to mention today is one of my all-time favorites, the native oak leaf hydrangea. This plant has amazing large oak leaf-shaped foliage and beautiful cone-shaped flowers. Plant lovers everywhere often seek out plants with four-season interest. This gives us a beautiful plant to look at during spring, summer, fall, and winter. When winter in Wisconsin can be quite a long season, the oak leaf hydrangeas, peeling cinnamon reddish brown bark, is a pleasure to view against the backdrop of the snow-covered landscape. Add in the showy flower heads that persist in winter, and you have a great winter plant. The large leaves that emerge in spring are thick and slightly fuzzy. The showy, fragrant blooms on the plant can light up a shady corner of your yard, as the oak leaf hydrangea does prefer shade. The leaves turn beautiful shades of red, orange, and yellow in the fall. This plant has by far the best fall color of any of the hydrangeas. Several popular cultivars of oak leaf hydrangea include Snow Queen, with its pure white panicles that gradually turn pink, or Ruby Slippers, with white flowers that mature to rich pinkish red, with dark green leaves also tinted red. For a more compact plant, suitable for the smaller landscape, try Gatsby Gal, which gets to be 5 to 6 feet high and wide, or Sykes Dwarf, a compact form with small white panicles that turn pink and the leaves turn a deep red in the fall. Well, thanks for letting me share a little about the hydrangeas that I'd like to add to my garden this year. If you're looking to select some hydrangeas for your garden, check out the selections available at Cottage Grove Nursery, just off I-90 in West Salem, or at Second Nature at Reed's Creek in Reedstown along Highway 14. Both have a variety to choose from and knowledgeable staff to pick out the plant that is the right one for you and your garden space. If you loved Plant Hosta or want to learn more about this wonderful plant, on the bookshelf today is a great reference book called The Ultimate Hostas Handbook by Denny Permana. This book is filled with useful information for hosta gardeners of all levels. You'll find everything you need to learn about the proper techniques for choosing, planting, watering, and fertilizing them. Want design ideas and how to use your hosta in perennial beds or containers? You'll find that information here as well. It also contains tips on pest and disease management and how to propagate hosta properly. Check out the Ultimate Hostas Handbook and add some new depth to your shade garden this season. A second reference worth mentioning is the Encyclopedia of Ornamental Grasses by John Greeley and Derek Fell. I'm a big fan of ornamental grasses too. I like the introduction to grasses at the beginning of this book, explaining habit and form, selection, maintenance, and planting. There's a section on designing with grasses, but the majority of the book is the encyclopedia portion with full descriptions of over 200 different grasses and grass-like plants. For those into ornamental grasses, this reference book needs a spot on your bookcase. A discussion during a recent rainstorm at work was speculating about how much rain we'd had, so the tool I want to share in this month's tool shed is information about rain gauges. We've had a lot of rain recently, yet several of my coworkers, including myself, admitted that we had not yet set out our rain gauges. In the Driftless area, the amount of rain fall can vary tremendously from one town to another, from one ridgetop or valley to the next. A way to monitor the rain that reaches your garden can be invaluable to your gardening efforts. Weekly, an inch of water is all that's needed to keep your grass green. With less water, it will go dormant in the summer and turn brown when it gets dry. But a little rain will have it turning green once again. 1 to 2 inches weekly is needed for most of the other plants in your garden during the growing season. The type of soil in your garden and newly planted specimens require some adjustment to these amounts. This is where the rain gauge comes in handy. Knowing exactly how much rain has fallen on your property can help you manage irrigation, water usage efficiently, and the overall garden health. Rain gauges come in a variety of shapes and sizes. Features to consider include capacity, readability, durability, and mounting options. Once you start looking at rain gauges, you'll see there are unlimited options available. A simple design is a plastic tube with printed markings on the outside and a stake base to push it into the ground. Raised and darkened markings are useful as the color can wear off and make some gauges difficult to read after a time. Some even come in a magnifying, easy-to-read version. Another design that I have seen is a metal stake that can be put in the ground that holds a glass tube with markings. Be sure to pull this one in the fall before we get a freeze, or you can damage the glass tube. And yes, I do know this from experience. If you're looking for something more high-tech in a weather station with a thermometer and a rain gauge combo, those are also available. You can even get one that will link to an app on your phone so you can monitor the rainfall from anywhere. You can be as high-tech or low-tech as you want, even in gardening. Just be sure your rain gauge is placed in an open area away from trees, buildings, or fences, and it needs to be level and vertical to give you the most accurate readings. In today's garden journal, there's lots of tasks that you can be doing in the coming month in your garden. Pick and choose those that are a priority for you. Amend the soil in your vegetable garden if you didn't do it already in the fall. Add compost or composted manure or other organic matter to improve soil structure and add nutrients to the soil. Vegetable plants are considered heavy feeders, which means they require high amounts of soil nutrients, particularly nitrogen, to grow fairly quickly, develop foliage and flowers in order to produce the fruit that you will harvest in your garden. Supplementing with other types of organic fertilizers during the growing season will help your plants to grow and produce higher yields. Your phone contains photos that can help you with garden planning efforts. Where in your photos did you have the least amount of pictures of blooming plants? Now's the time to look back on the previous year and see where you can fill in the gaps this season. Do you not have much blooming early or late in the season? It's a great time to research and find plants that will extend your season of bloom. Local garden centers, botanical gardens, and the UW Extension Service all have resources to assist you in picking out the right plants for the bloom time that you wish to fill in. You can also do some of that research yourself by visiting and supporting public gardens. Put some of these on your radar for a visit. Many can easily be done in a day, or string a few together for a fun weekend of garden hopping around the Upper Midwest. In Madison, check out Old Brick Botanic Garden and the Allen Centennial Garden. The Minnesota Landscape Arboretum is in Chaska, Minnesota, near the Twin Cities. Dubuque Arboretum and Botanical Garden in Iowa. The Mitchell Park Domes in Milwaukee. In Rockford, Illinois, visit the Rockford Arboretum and the Anderson Japanese Garden. The Chicago Botanical Garden is located in Glencoe, Illinois, and the Morton Arboretum is in the western suburbs of Chicago in Lisle, Illinois. This is just a partial list, so if you want to suggest any other great gardens, I'm happy to share them here on the show. Please send me an email to gardening@wdrt.org, and I'll mention them on a future show. Now that the rain has backed off a bit, it's time to clean up flower beds. Remove perennial plant foliage, leaves, branches, and other debris in your flower beds for the benefit of butterflies, fireflies, moths, and bees that are overwintering in the garden. Leave the flower stalks, but remove surrounding debris of flowers. Once the new growth begins on these plants, you can remove those old dead stalks. Divide perennials when the ground is workable, but before the plant begins to actively grow. Plan to divide plants that are getting too dense, like lamb's ears or ornamental grasses, or whose centers are dying back, like Siberian iris, catmint, or salvia. Dividing them rejuvenates the plants. Dig up the root clumps when the soil's ready to be worked, but before new growth begins and the new leaves emerge. Divide the plants by pulling or teasing the roots apart or cutting the clump with a knife or a spade. Remove any dead or diseased plant parts and replant the sections in a suitable location at the same depth as the original plant. Water and mulch your new clumps. If you don't have enough space in your garden once you divide these plants, share with friends and family. You may be able to get some new plants to freshen up your perennial beds this season. Another task that should probably have already been done is to remove any thick layers of mulch that you placed around tender perennials or roses in the fall to insulate them against the cold temperatures of winter. A thin layer of mulch is still beneficial for the plants, so don't scrape it all away. Leave at least an inch or two of mulch to cover the soil and keep plant roots cool and moisture in the soil to keep it from evaporating. Get a jump start on weeding in your garden. This is the time when a good hoe helps to remove the small weed seedlings with little effort. Regular weeding in the garden from the very start will help you to avoid those all-day binge weeding sessions. It's also an ideal time as your beds are getting ready to wake up for you to remulch those garden beds and give them a fresh look for the season. It's much easier to mulch now before everything has leafed out. You'll have room to move around in the garden beds, and there is less risk of damaging plants when trying to mulch around them. Once the soil is workable, it's also a good time to re-edge garden beds at the beginning of the season. This will give your garden beds a nice edge for the mower to ride along, and if you dig deep enough, you create a barrier to keep grass from easily invading your garden beds. Apply fertilizer to trees and shrubs if needed. Typically, you only have to do this once a year, so spring is a good time before things start to grow again, or wait until fall when the plants go dormant. And stake tall and floppy perennials early. This way, as the plants grow, they will hide those stakes, so you get a nice clean garden look. And lastly, plant annual flowers, summer bulbs, and tender garden vegetables after all danger of frost has passed. We typically think of Mother's Day as the average last frost date, but changing weather patterns often give us frost as late as the end of May. If you want bright, beautiful containers for your home landscape, check out the container workshops at Deep Rooted Organics in Westby. Bring your containers, fill them with plants, leave them for us to tend in the greenhouse until it's time to set them out around your home. Then just pick them up and voila, you'll have instant landscape color. Well, that's a wrap for today. I'll leave you with another song for the garden playlist. Let's add Will It Grow by Jacob Dylan. Thanks so much for joining me today. Please join me again next month for another discussion about gardening and plants. Have a wonderful day. Let's go out and make our world a little more beautiful, one plant at a time.